we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an advert from the Surrey Advertiser, read by Neil Sleet.
Hurry, act now to beat funeral price rises.
And our thanks to Mrs. J. Otley for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Robin Ince. And opposite them on my left, Carrie Quinlan and Kevin Day. Right, Jeremy, why are the middle classes set to become the not even working classes?
The economy's doing quite badly.
2 points. Right, next.
Point to Mervyn King. He's noticed it's not going so well. Well, apparently, there's lots of jobs being lost, but not so much in manufacturing on account of we don't make anything anymore. So they're mostly white-collar jobs. BT have sacked a load of people. I didn't know anyone worked for BT at all, apart from one man called Hamish who wants to know how I'm doing and makes me wait for 2 hours before answering the phone. It's weird, the language of employment, because when there are new jobs, jobs are created in some kind of divine way, either by government or the private sector. Jobs are created. But when people are sacked in vast numbers facing destitution, the jobs have merely been lost. I'm sorry, your job didn't turn up for work today. We've not seen it. We don't know where it is. I suppose you'll have to go home and live on benefits. I think the lesson of what's happened recently is that capitalism is a great idea in theory, but in practice it just doesn't work.
Have you noticed, though, Jeremy, for the last 10, 15 years, jobs have been lost all over the place, mainly in working-class sectors. Bus conductors have lost their jobs. Flower sellers, that sort of chippy working-class job. They've all going left, right and centre. Guardian couldn't give a flying monkeys. Now it's ballet dancers and courgette designers.
I think it's good news, isn't it? Because the last time 3 million people were unemployed, it was called the Thatcherite economic miracle. So it can surely only be good news as we see that Gordon Brown described it as fiscal stimulus is on the way, which is a fantastic name for some kind of tribute act. please welcome to stage Fiscal Stimulus. The songs of Pink Floyd. I look forward to that.
30,000 estate agents have lost their jobs.
And they say it's all bad news.
Well, government spokesman expressed disappointment at the figures, and I thought, well, it could be... it could be 40,000 by next month if we...
I turned on to Channel 4. I don't know why. It was a mistake. At 8 o'clock, I was hoping to watch the boy who looked like Anthony Worrell Thompson. but I turned on Channel 4 and the announcer of this new programme said, the property boom is over. It's time to stop thinking of property as an investment and time to start thinking about it as somewhere that you live. Yes! That's what we've all been saying for 10 years.
I never quite understood, because I rent. Thank you. I never understood people saying that renting is wasted money. That's like saying buying food is wasted money because you can't then sell it on. Unless you meet Gillian McKeith, I suppose.
Britain is facing the prospect of a white-collar recession, with the middle classes bearing the brunt of redundancies and unemployment hitting those working in the financial services hardest. Just feel a tear come into your eye, can't you? Thank God for Margaret Thatcher, or there might have been some blue-collar jobs left to lose as well. 2 points to Jeremy. Robin, why should we girls be worrying our pretty little heads about it?
Oh, there's so many things, isn't there? The tea towel shortage, which has gone largely unmentioned, apart from Tea Towel Magazine, yeah. and Doily Monthly, which the Doily shortage, again, was entirely missed there. Children had lost their safety scissors.
Please don't make it too complicated, because I won't follow.
Britain has slipped down the ladder of feminism, whatever the... Not the ladder of feminism. There'd be awful to have a ladder of feminism. There'd be a man underneath it, wolf-whistling as you went up it. But
the ladder stocking of feminism.
Yeah. It is gender equality, darling.
Britain is now, I think, number 13 out of 130 in terms of gender equality, yeah. Being beaten by North Europe. We've slipped from, I think, number 8, where we were very proud, yeah. Number 8. We were hoping to be Christmas number one in the gender equality list, but we've now sunk down to number 13 and continued to slide downwards.
We're down 2 to number 13, thanks mainly to Ruth Kelly, I think.
It's not all negative, though. I mean, it is out of 130, and surprisingly, I believe bottom again has been Saudi Arabia, Chad and Yemen. Now there's a bit of a scorch
with
that. But
we have slipped below Latvia. We're below, and I thought about that for 5 minutes, and I thought that was disgusting. We're below Latvia, and I can't think of a single Latvian stereotype to come up with.
The top four countries for gender equality are Norway, Finland, Sweden and Iceland. I've got a theory about this. I think the colder the country, the better the sexual equality, and this is because men are unlikely to see women as sex objects when they're wearing seven layers. Do you not think that?
Then again, I refer you to Chad, Yemen and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, no, it's fair.
Where did Denmark come?
Denmark is up 1-7. Looks like being Fluff Freeman. Up 1-7. Britain has slipped down the league table of gender equality for the third year in a row. Greater representation of women is vital to stave off future crises, said Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum. Now, I am sure that Klaus is doing a great job, but do you not think for these figures that maybe they could have found a woman spokesman? So 2 points there to Robin. Carrie, have a listen to this.
Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat and his black and white cat. Early in the morning, just as day is dawning, he picks up all the postbags in his van.
See how we've given you an easier question.
I know that, it's Postman Pat.
Well done, 2 points.
I know, just remember the version we used to sing at school of that. Postman Pat ran over his catch. All the guts went flying. Postman Pat was crying.
My cat was killed last week. By a postman, strangely enough. Bringing a cheque for the wrong amount. And telling me I'd been sacked from the only job I ever loved. But thanks for that. Thanks for that, Carrie. That was great.
Carrie, who is feeling the benefit of benefits?
Postman. There's going to be a thing where the post office card account where you get your benefits paid into, they put out to tender so that other companies could apply to run that thing. And they've now said that they're not making it a competition anymore. The post office is going to stay doing it.
It's a story that's gripped you from beginning to end. And who decided this?
What's his face? The government man. I can't remember his name. Oh, God, I used to be good at this.
Lord Mandelson.
No, it wasn't. It was the little Weasley fella.
James Purnell.
James Purnell.
I've never heard
James
anyone
Purnell.
Say, no, it wasn't Mandelson, it was the little Weasley fella.
He's the big Weasley fella.
Ah, true.
Because I do agree, actually, that post offices, they shouldn't be closed down, but there has been this big debate where going, it's the social life of the rural area. I've never met anyone who said, where did you meet your wife? It was at the post office. Having one of those wonderful afternoons of looking at the stamps, and then we dance to the sound of something dropping from behind a counter.
The government's decision to let the post office retain its contract to distribute benefits to over 4 million claimants has saved 3,000 post offices from closure. The first uniformed postmen were sent out on their rounds in 1793, and some of them still haven't come back yet. Kevin, mm-hmm. Who has been measuring up for carpets in the corridors of power?
This has been the touching sight of George Bush showing Obama around the White House with his hand on his back, which is either a symbolic gesture or just getting him out of there as quickly as he possibly could. I just love the fact that he's just walking around the White House going, that's coming out. Green? Who painted that? Lincoln? But it's apparently fraught with danger. It's the funniest thing I've read. The best bit of mischief I've read for ages when Clinton had to clear out and make way for George W. Bush because they knew that he signed his name George W. Bush. They took all the W's off the keyboards on the typewriters.
I thought it was actually Laura showed Michelle round because I don't think they trusted George to show anybody round anything.
No, George. Apparently George showed Obama round the man bit.
Oh, right.
And Laura showed... And apparently...
The tool
I'm
shed
disappointed
like
in you,
that.
Radio 4, I really have to say. I'm constantly on the lookout for double entendre. Man bits, it didn't occur to me. Yes.
These are people who grew up on Round the Horn. They're there before you.
I just wish that at the end of it, Obama said, yeah, it's quite nice. We've got a few more to see. We'll let you know.
I think it's a terrible risk, though, letting Bush lose to show anybody around. It's scary, sort of, because Bush would be thinking, I'm showing him things that he'll need to know. This button might be the button that turns on the immersion heater. I'll press it and see.
Someone else, about a week after he... Well, in fact, not even that, was going, everyone's saying he's black. He's not black. He's mixed race. And you go, well, I don't think that's how it worked in the South during lynchings. I don't think they kind of went we're going to lynch you, and it went, I'm mixed race. We're going to give you a Chinese burn. You know,
when you says he's going to close Guantanamo and try the people in America. Lots of people protested and saying, we can't try them here. That would be letting terrorists into the country.
Well, not only that, this is serious. The boiler suit industry are furious.
Yeah.
I wrote a thing about Guantanamo Bay a while back for some website, and I got a 16-year-old girl wrote to me and went, oh, well, if they're in Guantanamo Bay, they're all guilty anyway. And anyway, they only torture them by playing loud music. I went to a party once, there was some loud music. It was annoying, but it wasn't torture, right? And then this is true. I wrote back to her, and I said, well, maybe you should have a look at some other websites and some other statistics. And she went, oh, this is all political correctness, confusing political correctness and the Geneva Convention. And it's a very simple thing to do. And this literally continued till about 5 o'clock in the morning. And then I thought, she's 16 years old and I'm 39. It looks like I'm grooming her. But not grooming her for sex, grooming her for Marxism, which I've heard is the worst thing to do nowadays.
I've heard some excuses for when your wife comes home at 5 o'clock in the morning.
2 points to Kevin. This is the meeting of two great minds in the White House, Barack Obama and his wife Michelle, who visited to view their new home and for the president and president-elect to discuss a rescue package for the motor industry. After their meeting, Bush gave Obama a tour of the rooms where his presidency was shaped, the Oval Office, where he decided to invade Iraq, the cabinet room where he authorized Guantanamo Bay, and the corridor where he learned never to run with scissors. So at the end of round one, I can tell you that Jeremy and Robin have got 4 points, but so too have Carrie and Kevin. We start round two with a correction from the Lancashire Herald.
Our apologies to Mr. Clarence Sale for our spelling mistake on a recent advert. We thought he said clearance sale, and he's been inundated with calls for the last 3 weeks.
Our thanks to Ian Birch of Blackburn for sending that in. Jeremy, who's given the judiciary a good lashing over the right to expose a good lashing?
Oh, Lord, this isn't just prostitution, it's S&M prostitution. This is... The Daily Mail has gone off Max Mosley because he's not the man his father was, that's for sure. Paul Dacre is the editor-in-chief, I think, of the Mail. He's very concerned about the prospect of privacy law being brought in by the back door, because anything brought in by the back door is completely depraved and perverted. And he did this huge speech at the Society of Editors complaining about this.
Dacre accusing Justice Edie of bringing in a privacy law by the back door. Surely that's the only place to bring it in. I mean, if you bring it in by the front door, there might be photographers. I think it's...
I didn't even know Max Mosley was until this. When I saw this thing about... Well, that's also what, like, Nazi sex games, when it was, you know, spanking. And I don't know that much about the Third Reich, but I don't think it was the central plank of their philosophy.
Do you know what the most depraved thing Max Mosley does? He pretends he's a 16-year-old girl.
I do love the Daily Mail. I was on holiday recently and the only paper we were able to get was the Daily Mail. And I opened it and there was a piece by Norman Tebbit that was just one of those ones you just go, oh, my word. And he said, has anyone else noticed how crime has gone up since civil partnerships came in?
Yeah. He was talking about wedding presents to steal.
Oh, is
now
that what it is?
He was talking about interior design crime, I imagine.
Oh.
Stripy fabrics with spotty curtains,
the
he was talking
police.
About. The fashion, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know what he's like with a clash.
Drive-by soft furnishings. Yeah.
Daily Mail editor Paul Dacre has criticised a High Court judge who ruled against the News of the World in favour of Max Mosley's privacy. The Daily Mail was an early supporter of Sir Oswald Mosley's British Union of Fascists, running the headline, Hurrah for the Black Shirts, which just pipped the headline, Eva Brown, Cellulite Misery, to the front page. Robin, who is worried about bad things coming in tiny packages?
I think this is a science question, basically,
yep.
Isn't it? Is it about the fact that I believe it is the possible effect of nanoparticles mm-hmm. on vesicle lipid quantities?
You want that countdown job so badly,
don't you? How come he gets the easy questions?
It's also... there's something that called nanoparticles,
yeah.
And they're teeny tiny particles. They're actually 1/97th of a millipede, I believe, which is a specific gardeners-based measurement. And they've found in things like sun cream, and they haven't been properly tested. And if you rub them on, it may be the equivalent of rubbing on very small Donald Pleasants and Raquel Welches, which will then go into your internal system and swim around your aorta. 1966, fantastic voyage. Hope you got the reference.
In a nicer world, though, nanoparticles will be what your nan is made of, isn't it? It'll be fluff and biscuit crumbs and little whiskery kisses.
Anyway, apparently they're so poorly understood, scientists are unable to predict how they behave. Ooh, it sounds like most of the teenagers on the council estate near my house.
They
I say
so
near my house, they have to cross the moat to get to me.
They said, Sandy, that they may be bad for you, we're not sure, which is not brilliant science, is it? I might as well say squirrels may play cricket when we go to bed.
Really?
I'm not sure.
They are supposed to be quite dangerous, though. I mean, you must be quite worried, Sandy. They could knock you off your feet.
And an
Don't
extra...
go to the point.
Extra point there to Jeremy and Robin. The government have been urged to begin major research into nanomaterials after leading experts expressed concern regarding the safety of the tiny particles. Nanoparticles are smaller than a virus, but slightly larger than Andy Hamilton. Oh, it's OK, he's not here to defend himself. Or indeed bite anybody's ankles as they leave. So,
He's not allowed in graveyards either, Andy Hamilton. Bath and Wells have banned gnomes and plastic flowers from their cemeteries.
See, if I take charge of the edit, that's the only bit that'll go out, and the bit that I say...
It was rather lovely, actually. The spokesman said, gnomes do not exist, and therefore are inappropriate in cemeteries, presumably among the statues of angels.
Carrie, who's decided to shelve their rules and bend a little?
Oh, is this fruit and vegetables?
Yes.
This is European fruit and vegetables. We're allowed funny-shaped vegetables all over again. In the same week that Esther Ranson's going into I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here. She must be furious that she's not around for this. Knobbly fruit and veg are OK, apparently, because Europe they were throwing away something like 30% of fruit and vegetables because they were a funny shape.
Because in particular, it said, the Daily Mail said this is a victory for common sense, obviously. If only we could get rid of that pesky Human Rights Act, we'd all be laughing as well. But it said, in particular, carrots can now be a funny shape. But the beauty of being a boy is carrots are always a funny shape. They are hilariously... You just have to look at a carrot. Like, one of the joys of Christmas is the fun you can have with a carrot and two Brussels sprouts. Only Cyril Fletcher was still alive to see this glorious day.
It's
another one for you, Carrie.
Thanks very much.
Carrots look like penises because health advisors are always rolling condoms onto them. They are to show kids how to put a condom on. And always poor, confused kids.
It was a
thinking,
banana at my school.
Was it?
Yeah, you went to a posh school, didn't you?
Yeah. See, in wartime, we didn't get them because of rationing.
Of course, bananas aren't on the list of vegetables that are now OK to be a bit knobbly.
I've always found that song, Bananas in Pyjamas, rather dubious.
I used to sing that walking up and down the stairs with Fred Delahay, who lived around the corner from me, and I recently asked him to be my friend on Facebook, and he said no.
Because of the whole bananas thing?
I think he probably doesn't want to be reminded of singing Bananas in Pyjamas walking up the stairs.
Oddly shaped fruit and vegetables, once the staple of amusing television programmes like That's Life, are to return to supermarket shelves after the EU scrapped rules dictating their size and shape. Pears will still be sold under strict EU legislation, which dictates they must be too hard to eat for a fortnight and then go off within 30 seconds. Kevin, who thinks we should cut down our middle man?
This is a rather bizarre story that you can be overweight and that's not good. You can be underweight and that's not good. But if you're underweight with love handles, the love handles could apparently kill you if you get them trapped in an escalator. But it rather bizarrely describes the shape. I can't remember the exact phrase, but their body mass index, they're now elaborating in a different way.
It's something to do with the ratio of your hips and your waist, isn't
it? Yeah, I was so entranced by the cartoon of a love handle that I was just...
Kevin, I feel that we should reveal something to the audience that's a secret piece of trivia about the two of us. Do you want to reveal it?
No.
Kevin Day and I once did a fitness video. Can I just say it didn't sell well?
It was supposed to... It was with Steve
You're
Cram.
You're actually embarrassed now, aren't you?
Only that I ran during it. It was with Steve Cram, and it was the worst 2 weeks of Steve Cram's life.
they made the mistake of having catering for the shoot, and I... me finished.
Is it still available?
I believe so.
It is, but it's on the top shelf, so no one can reach it.
Yeah.
Well, Sandy can't, but I might.
Stop it. That's just shocking.
It's just cruel.
You're slightly
I'm sorry.
Tall.
Yeah,
Sandy's got a degree, and she's a well-loved presenter and icon.
Oh, and 2 points to Kevin Day there. Yeah. Researchers have revealed this week that carrying extra weight around your middle, even if you are of normal weight, can dramatically increase the risk of early death. A thickened girth can be a sign of type 2 diabetes. Can I just say that thickened girth is not a phrase you hear very often on BBC Radio? Well, not since Russell Brand resigned, anyway. I can tell you that at the end of round 2, the scores are Carrie and Kevin have got 8 points, but Jeremy and Robin are in the lead with 9. And before we start round 3, here is a correction from an Edinburgh student magazine.
We would like to apologise for a captioning error which occurred in our news section last week. A picture of the tomb of Mary, Queen of Scots, at Westminster Abbey was wrongly described as being a picture of Alex Salmond.
And our thanks to Ben Politowski for sending us that. Jeremy, which royal has veered off course this week?
Well, the QE2 ran aground. Yeah. On its way back to Southampton, hit a sandbank because it's being taken to Dubai to be a floating hotel. They're going to cut its funnel off and hideous humiliation and then disembowel it, and its funnel will be used as some kind of entrance atrium, and it will be a floating hotel next to a made-up island in the shape of a tree. And a QE2 enthusiast said... the reason it ran aground on its way into Southampton before its final voyage was that somehow it knew. Somehow it knew that it was going there. And Flipper popped up and said, "What's wrong, QE2? What is it? Is Skippy trapped down an old mine shaft?" And it said, "No, I'm going to be a floating hotel." And it said, "Run aground, that should do it."
I have to say, it was one of the great missed 70s comedy opportunities of all time this week on Sky News. When the Sky News chap cut to the Vox Pops and said, "Do you know anything about this ship?" He said, "Yes, I work for Cunard." And nobody said, "So do I, but I don't go on about it."
Actually, there was some extraordinary stuff about this story. There was a woman called Josephine Toombs, who's apparently on board massage therapist, and she said, "I could not work on any other ship." And I thought, blimey, it's harsh bail conditions. Anyway, she said, "I have had great times on board. I saw Frankie Howard and Nelson Mandela." Now, there is a double act that you just...
I don't understand why anyone, actually, I haven't met anyone who's sad about it, but this kind of sadness that it's what made Britain great. Corpulent British tourists lying on a boat, refusing to actually visit anywhere foreign, but look at it from a distance and say, "That used to be ours." That's everything that sums up Britain.
The QE2 ran aground at the entrance to Southampton Harbour on her penultimate voyage before being retired to Dubai to become a floating hotel. Most people in Southampton were surprised to discover that ships went to Dubai, as they had previously thought if they sailed past the Isle of Wight, they would fall off the end of the earth. Kevin, who's battered the opposition with his winning formula?
It's Yorkshire puddings. Are you trying to tell me something? It's love handles and Yorkshire puddings you've given me so far.
I think you're very lovely and cuddly, and I'm glad you're no fitter than I am. After our 2 weeks with Steve Cram.
This is the good news that cancer has been cured, freeing up scientists to come up with the perfect batter for Yorkshire pudding. Obviously, they kicked back about 5:30 and said, "Well, we've done cancer, leukaemia seems to be sorted. I mean, Yorkshire puddings, isn't it?" And it turns out that the optimum height for a Yorkshire pudding is 4 inches, and currently the male and female scientists are still arguing as to what constitutes 4 inches. And I don't like... It's a difficult story to talk about, Sandy, because it sounds like you're going to stereotype people and whatever, but the professor, Professor E. Bargum... aided by his whippet, sending messages to London via pigeon.
Helped was by Willie Eckersley.
Yeah. But it's a great quote, because he said, and I like the passion and the fury of people from the North, because the quote goes something along the lines of, "Only a Northerner can understand the soul of a Yorkshire pudding. A Southerner has got no idea how to get inside the soul of a Yorkshire pudding." That's meant to be an insult, apparently. I'm proud of the fact I spend more time reading books and watching telly than thinking about Yorkshire puddings.
4 inches does seem like a very high Yorkshire pudding to me.
That's exactly what my wife... I made the mistake. I made the terrible mistake of saying to my wife and said, Yorkshire pudding? No, that was it. It was emails from her friends all day, phone calls and 4 inch. I was scoffed at the idea of a 4 inch Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah.
Apparently the gravy would have the walls down before you even started. It's like, I said, it's not Troy, is it?
That's scientists. How they did it. It was nothing to do with the wooden horse. It was all the gravy.
It was gravy. I would study more history if I thought there was going to be gravy-related siege incidents.
The Royal Society of Chemistry, led by Yorkshireman John Elmsley, has discovered the formula for the perfect Yorkshire pudding. It should be at least 4 inches tall and preferably made in Yorkshire. The Yorkshire pudding was invented in the 19th century as a form of cheap housing for the North. Sorry, that's not what it says.
You'll
at
get
all.
Emails.
That's silly. The Yorkshire pudding was invented in the 19th century for poor families who couldn't afford meat. Large Yorkshire puddings were an inexpensive way to fill up, and for even poorer families, somewhere to have a bath. Obviously, they shared the gravy. 2 points to Kevin. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
Sandy, this was sent in by Katie Porter of Brighton, but somehow she got it from the Ashland Tidings of Oregon. It says, dog attack. Police responded to a report of two dogs running loose and attacking ducks at about 11:20 a.m. Sunday. The officer cited a resident for loose dogs. The duck refused medical treatment and left the area.
Robin.
This is just the headline that I like. I'll give you the details after. This is from Nicholas Hall, who's emailed in, apparently from Australia. The headline is, "Poo ice cream victim says hotel trying to discredit her." it's a woman who was served a bowl of ice cream laced with feces. She was served the complimentary bowl, obviously complimentary, complimentary bowl of gelato at the Coogee Bay Hotel. It has been described as a smear campaign.
Carrie.
Sandy, this was sent in by Henry Fryer from Hampshire, and it's from the Hampshire Chronicle Small Ads. John Lewis bathroom mirror with shelf. Dimensions 50 by 70 centimetres. Very good condition. Shows reflection when looked in.
Kevin.
This is from Leslie Wakerall. It's from the Times Book Supplement. It talks about a 75-year-old Texas rancher showing a country doctor around his ranch, and the conversation turned to the election. And he described Sarah Palin as a post-turtle. And the doctor said, "What's a post-turtle?" And the old man says, "Well, you know when you're driving down a country road, you come across a fence post with a turtle balanced on top. That's a post-turtle. You know she didn't get up there by herself. She doesn't belong up there. She doesn't know what to do when she's up there. And you wonder what kind of dumbass put her there to begin with."
Let's take a look at the final score. Carrie and Kevin have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Robin with 13. Before we leave you, here's an email sent to everyone at Northumberland Tyne and Wear NHS Trust, sent in by Dave Stone.
Come to Walter's Restaurant on Friday the 14th of November to support children in need and take part in the Guess the Name of Pudsey Bear competition.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Robin Ince, Carrie Quinlan and Kevin Day. The chair is Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by me, Neil Sweet. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodney Crooks, Daniel Ward, with additional material by Stephen Carlin and James Sherwood. The producer was Ed Morrish.